Chapter 4. A truth that all living things must come to terms with at some point is that their life is finite, that the energy they draw from the universal reservoir will someday be taken back. It was a truth that apothecary Fabius dismissed as a failure of imagination. Life was motive force like any other, like electricity, like warp fire, and once absurd notions of morality and right and wrong were removed from the equation, the restoration of that motive force became simply a matter of biological engineering. His laboratory aboard the Andronicus was a place of wonders and revelation, where the secrets of life and death and the narrow spaces in between were laid bare by the slice of his blade and exposed to his towering intellect. It was a labyrinthine warren of curving passageways, vaulted vivisectoria of cold iron, and hermetically sealed chambers with armour-glass portholes that looked into bedlams of grotesquerie. Life had been made, reshaped, and extinguished here. Experiments on living tissue, living beings, and the ignoble dead had stocked the lair of Fabius with specimens of human, post-human, and alien origin. Scavenging the battlefields of this newborn rebellion with his polished steel blades, he had accumulated an alchemist's treasure trove of the macabre, the holy, and the divine. Progenoids cut from the flesh of the living and the dead of Istvan V and Prismatica had furnished Fabius with the genetic master key to 7 of the Emperor's legions, the code sequences that would form the basis of his ultimate revelation, the secrets of the Emperor himself. The cryo-frozen body before him was a distraction, but a necessary one. Its form was brutish and clumsy, but it was one Fabius had worked upon before, rewiring its synaptic receptors to create a cacophonous burst of pleasure in the subject's mind at the merest hint of pain. The internal workings of the body were subtle and would have made a biologist of the Mechanicum weep with a mix of admiration and horror. Icy mists filled the surgical chamber, every last trace of warmth sucked from the space by powerful refrigeration units that chugged and growled beneath the metal flooring. His custom-designed chirurgeon array squatted at his shoulders like an eager observer, its grotesquely articulated arms darting around him with a mind of their own, suturing an oozing blood vessel or cauterizing an open vein. Its clicking digits were more dexterous than his own hands, but there was a satisfaction in feeling the soft, wet texture of an opened body beneath the haptic fingertips of his gauntlets. Fabius wore armour contoured to his lean form, enhanced at the waist and shoulders to better support the chirurgeon, with additional joints and custom-fabricated gauntlets that incorporated numerous tools of excruciation and healing. A long cloak of pale white hung from his shoulders, stained red with blood at its trailing edge. Lank hair, bleached of colour and life, hung in matted ropes from his scalp, and eyes of utter blackness glittered in a face made gaunt by malnutrition and abstinence. A rasping tongue licked along Fabius's lipless mouth like a lizard tasting the air.
"Are you not finished yet?"
said a voice from the far side of the laboratory, but Fabius did not turn from his work.
"The Legion will be assembling for the drop to the planet's surface."
"They have already left," said Fabius. "The Phoenician and his flawless host will soon be guests of the Lord of Iron."
"I should be with them. You promised I would be with them."
Fabius shrugged.
"More pressing matters arose," he said. "Be glad I attend to you at all. Had the decision been mine, I would have left you to die."
"I did die."
Fabius waved away the semantics.
"Life, death, words. Life is a purely mechanistic process. The body, a machine that can be restarted when the motive force behind it fails."
easy for you to say, apothecary. You're not the one that's dead.
And neither are you, though if you persist in distracting me, I may oblige you.
The Primarch would kill you.
Oh, ironic fate that we should both perish by the same blade, laughed Fabius.
The voice fell silent, which surprised Fabius, but it gave him a chance to continue his work in peace. The cut was a clean one. The blow struck with enough force and by a sharp enough blade that there was virtually no tissue damage beyond the exact point of impact. It was a killing blow of perfect precision, one that only a Primarch was capable of delivering.
"What is taking so long, anyway?"
said the voice, and Fabius ground his teeth at the tonal implications of his tardiness.
"You are supposed to be the best, or was that another of your hollow boasts?"
Fabius bit back a caustic response and resisted the urge to wreak some spiteful harm on the body before him. Instead, he said,
"The nerve clusters at the base of the neck have been severed completely, and trust me, the consequences of them being reconnected wrongly would not be pleasant."
"I can live with pain."
"And you will," promised Fabius, "the greatest of pain. You will know pain like no other, and it will drive you mad with joy. Every instant of life I give you will be spent in a symphony of pain and pleasure. You will hate me and worship me in equal measure, I think."
"You should know that I have always hated you, Fabius."
Fabius turned to address the speaker and grinned, the expression like that of a lecherous skull taking great pleasure in knowing that the living would soon be its kin.
"You waste your hate on me," said Fabius. "I do not take enough notice of your existence for it to be anything other than an irrelevance. Loftier matters demand my attention, not this patchwork abomination of flesh."
"I think I will kill you some day."
"You will not," said Fabius.
"You are arrogant."
"And you are a fool. Think of all the sensation that might yet be yours, the cravings of flesh and blood yet to be satisfied. Imagine the glories you will forego by antagonizing me and causing me to kill you."
"The Primarch himself ordered you to restore me," said the voice, almost pleading.
"A moment of misplaced remorse," said Fabius, bending back to his task as the chirurgeon clicked impatiently. "One he probably already regrets. No, my friend, be assured that if you die down here, you will not be missed. Already your fellow captains jostle and scheme to assume your mantle."
"I will return stronger and more powerful than ever before."
"That you will," agreed Fabius, turning back to the voice. "Now be silent and let me work."
On the far side of the shadowed laboratory, a severed head sat atop a crown of surgical spikes, tube feeds, blood pumps, electrocortical stimulators, and coolant coils that kept the brain within from death. Head and body belonged together, but had been shorn by a single blow from Fulgrim's golden-bladed sword. The severed head watched Fabius at work on his dead body and plotted on the many ways he wanted him to suffer. Somewhere around the hard pan of the Emperor's Children drop site, 3 kilometres beyond the valley mouth, a riot had collided with a triumphal parade. That could be the only possible explanation for the gaudy cavalcade of noise, colour and spectacle that processed into the valley. 10,000 mortals provided a vanguard for the Third Legion, a frantic host of screaming men and women, swirling banners and discordant noise blasting from instruments that bore no relation to anything crafted by a sane musician. Blooms of coloured and perfumed smoke wafted ahead of the host, fanned by glassy-eyed ogrins whose contoured body armour had been hammered to their flesh by barbed spikes. Forex watched with a mixture of anger and horror at the sight of the approaching rabble, a decadent celebration of every perversity and degradation known to man. The senior officers of the Iron Warriors had assembled at the towering barbican of the Southern Contravallation to greet the Phoenician and his Lord Commanders, and this was how they were met? With carnivalia and lunacy? Forex glanced towards Perturabo for some sign of how this insulting display had skewed his humours, but the Primarch's expression was as impermeable as the hardest rock, as expressionless as the mechanical warriors of the Iron Circle arranged in an arc behind him. Forex stood at the right hand of Perturabo, his heavy plate gleaming despite the meagre time that his armoury serfs had had to prepare him. Barely had Vulbron given his warning of the Third Legion's arrival than the Primarch had led them from the Cavia Ferrum and summoned his legion. 102 land raiders, chevroned in gold and jet, growled at their backs, alongside heavy artillery pieces with their elongated bronze barrels raised to the heavens in salute. Ranks of smaller crew-served weapons were arrayed in honour of this meeting of demigods, their gunners resplendent in the bronze cloaks of the Storbizashk. In the shadow of the monolithic walls, battalions of the Thorakitai stood, ranked in their tens of thousands, shuffling and jostling as their disciplined master's electro-goads whipped them into formation. Before them stood 200 grand battalions of Iron Warriors, 50,000 warriors in amber-dust-burnished warplate, like the ranked-up statues of a heathen king, afraid to meet the souls his armies had consigned to the afterlife. Such a display of might and magnificence had not been seen since the slaughter unleashed upon the black sands of Istvan. It was a host to conquer the stars and remake the galaxy, the likes of which would one day shake the very foundations of the Imperial Palace on Terra. And this was but one of the War Master's armies. The Stonewrought stood beside Forex, and he took a moment to admire the iron-bladed entrenching tool slung across the warrior's back. As much a weapon as a tool for breaking ground, it was a masterfully crafted implement. The edge was hard, and given a subtle bevel that would bite earth and flesh with the greatest of ease. Sultan Vulbron was a shaven-headed lieutenant of the 45th Grand Battalion, with thin eyes and skin that was pale in the face, leather-brown at the neck, from staring so long at the ground. Forex had watched Vulbron lay his hands upon the rock of a dozen planets, and through some unknowable geological communion learn its secret vulnerabilities, its strengths and its weaknesses. Where it would most readily break open, and where it would resist every pick, drill, and explosive. The skin of a world spoke to him, and that alone was worth the price of his dull company. Barban Falk, towering and absurdly solid, stood at Perturabo's left hand. Only a head shorter than the Lord of Iron, he was nevertheless made small by the Primarch, who imprinted his presence on the face of the world like a statement. The Legion's newest Triarch took his place at Falk's side, his armour still battered from the assault over the walls of the citadel. The ceramite of Kroger's plate had been cleaned of blood, and the unsullied suit made him look somehow less than Forex knew he could be. Torremino stood behind Forex, and the master of the Storbizashk made no attempt to hide his disdain for Kroger and the rank to which he had been elevated. As much as Forex enjoyed Torremino's displeasure, he had a nagging suspicion that this insult to the warsmith's pride would not be forgotten or forgiven. Behind the Primarch stood the mighty form of Barossus, restored to the Iron Warriors through the genius of the Tech Marine at his side. The iron and adamantium sarcophagus at the heart of his dreadnought body was a funerary casket of machine-stamped skulls and exhumed bones, the siege hammer and rotary cannon his instruments of death. Oil drizzled from his armoured flanks, and his augmitters growled with low-level static burrs like grinding metal. Twin lengths of chain hung from Barossus's back, and fettered at their ends were two bloodied figures, one encased in a full-body splint cage, the other clad in the fragmented remains of the dusty gold armour of the imperial fists. The forward elements of the capering host were drawing near, and coils of hallucinogenic fog writhed between the legs of the riotous assembly. It moved with a life of its own, eager to explore its creator's bodies and taste their sweat, their breath, and their dirt. The screams that reached to the skies were delirious and joyous, agonized and ecstatic, a braying wall of sound that echoed from the sides of the valley like the ravings of a million madmen. Scary fire priests spun and leapt throughout the dancing horde, their hooked chains and envenomed blades whipping and stabbing with gleeful abandon to cause pain and excruciation. Where their poisoned tips pierced an artery, the grateful victim would be seized by mad choreomaniacal fits. Roaring observers aped their lethal convulsions, and the dancing mania spread ever wider, becoming more and more elaborate until the original victim's madly pumping heart emptied their body of blood, and a new dance began elsewhere. Mass psychogenic hysteria gripped the thousands of men and women who screamed and laughed and cried like mourners or celebrants. They fought, they fornicated, moving to the rapid, pulsing beat of a driving imperative that none among the Iron Warriors could know. They carried towering banners, streaming gonflons, and serrated pennants ablaze with imagery that was at once obscene and alluring, repugnant and inviting. Forex recognized none of the heraldry, feeling a gut-deep revulsion at the graceful sweeps of the symbols worked into the textured banners, a meld of curves and voluptuous arcs penetrated by hard lines with barbed arrowheads atop their length. Nor were all the members of the host equal. Kings and queens and princes were feted in all their finery, silks and steel, velvet and leather. Their crowns were bone, their orbs the skulls of willing sacrifices, and the scepters made from the woven fingers of the handless handmaidens attending them. And just as there were the gaudy courts of royal madness, so too were their regicides by the dozen, as pretenders tore them down and took their blooded crowns for themselves. As degenerate as the dancing host's behaviour was, it was nothing compared to the physical malformations wrought on the flesh of its number. Some disfigurements appeared to be congenital, others the work of swords or maces in ritualized combat, but the vast majority appeared to have been engineered by scalpels, bone saws, and genetic modification. Men with anatomies reversed by horrific surgery capered on their hands with legs sutured to their shoulders and faces in their bellies. Vat-grown cherub grubs led packs of wild, spine-backed creatures like the bastard byblows of loathsome centipedes and giant scorpions. Women cavorted naked with scented oils slathering their bared breasts. Many were gifted with breasts beyond the number decreed by nature, and these violet-hued individuals were attended by howling slaves and weeping devotees. Amid the heaving, spasming march of the decadent host, some were content to dance, some to debase, others to violate, yet more to scream their throats bloody as they drove their bodies to lunatic extremes of excess. They howled with the hybrid monsters, and the most desperate for sensation set themselves ablaze and laughed as the flames consumed them. Forex took his helmet from the maglock on his thigh as the rapturous mass of degenerates drew near and the acrid tang of perfumes began to discomfort him.
"I saw some strange things on Istvan," began Forex, "but this is..."
He snapped his helm into the gorget seals as vocabulary failed him. No mere words could give name or reason to this behaviour. No codes of honour could reconcile this madness with the militaristic perfection and arrogant swagger the Emperor's children had once possessed.
"What has happened to you, my brother?" said Percherabo, his face betraying no hint of the terrible anger that was raging within his heart.
"Where are the Legion warriors?" asked Falk. Forex scanned the heaving mass of frenetic humanity as they spilled over the outermost earthworks, cavorting through razor-wire-edged killing grounds, across spiked ditches and past iron-faced gun emplacements. What would take months of bloody siege to break through was overcome in moments by the vanguard of the Emperor's children. At some unheard signal, the host fell utterly silent, halting in its maddened march a stone's throw from the iron warriors. Clouds of kicked-up dust mingled with the twitching curtain of narcotic smoke issuing from hidden sensors. After so cacophonous a din, the silence felt impossibly loud, and Forex scanned the sweating, breathless host for some sign of what was coming next. That sign came as the lunatics abased themselves on the sand, prostrating themselves as supplicant savages before burning flora. Sultan Volbron dropped to one knee, placing his palm on the earth.
"Get up, damn you," snapped Forex. "Iron warriors bend the knee to no one."
Volbron ignored him and cocked his head to one side as though listening to a voice only he could hear.
"He's here," said Volbron. "The Phoenician. He's coming."
Forex looked up as the flesh host before him parted, pushing themselves back with their bellies scraping the sand to make a wide corridor between them. Through the swirls of pink and mauve clouds, Forex could see the outline of something huge and swaying approaching. Vague silhouettes of power-armoured warriors marched alongside it, their forms granting some hope that the Third Legion had not abandoned all pretense of being a fighting force. 500 warriors in the shimmering purple of the Emperor's children emerged from the smoke, and their appearance drew a gasp of shock from the assembled iron warriors. Slashes of vivid pigment were spattered over their armour, the myriad contrasting hues and clashing colours offending the eye with their garish disregard for the Legion's heraldry. Jagged spikes jutted from pauldrons, and their helmets were Byzantine-winged affairs, with amplification hoods and intensifiers worked into the visors. They carried a banner of stiff pink that Forex could tell was fashioned from human skin, its texture and stench all too familiar to him. A runic device was emblazoned at its heart, the recurring motif he had seen worked in various designs upon the armour and flesh of the maddened horde, but distilled into its purest form. Born by legion warriors, the symbol offended Forex less than it had before, and he found himself drawn towards its beguiling curves and graceful loops. But then anger touched him, and he threw off whatever glamours were worked into its shape. Glamours? Where had that come from? A word of ancient usage that was meaningless in this age of reason and technological certitude. Whatever toxin burned in the sensors was a powerful psychotropic indeed, if it could drag such an archaic term from the mind of an iron warrior. Like the mortals before them, these warriors parted to form an honour guard, and behind them came a screaming, wailing mass of legionaries whose weapons were unlike anything Forex had ever seen in a battle barge's armoury. Like oversized axes, they were fitted with all manner of amplification devices, tonal distorters, and artifacts whose function Forex could not even begin to guess. Thrumming bass notes of raw kinetic force throbbed in their long necks, and he wondered if such weapons might be employed in the reduction of a fortress wall. These warriors went without helms, and their faces were a horror of distended jaws, with eternally screaming mouths and gaping wounds in the skull where their ears had been surgically adapted to collect and render sound into its purest elements. Amid the deformations, Forex thought he saw a face he recognized. Marius Verosian, his old comrade from the earliest days of the Great Crusade. But this twisted freak was a pale shadow of that honourable warrior, a waxwork left out in the sun too long, a noble statue beaten with hammers. Forex took a step towards the warrior, but a taut shake of the head from Perturabo pinned him to the spot.
and then the Primarch of the Emperor's children stood revealed, his entrance as dramatic and sudden and shocking as he had no doubt intended. Atop a great palanquin of living beings, fused, sewn, and warped together, the Phoenician emerged from the sentient clouds of fumes. A squad of warriors in Terminator armor bore this flesh palanquin on their shoulders, the spikes and sharpened edges of their pauldrons drawing blood and screams of pleasure in equal measure. Fulgrim's frost-white hair spilled from beneath a helm of dazzling silver, and his entire body was wrapped in a cloak of shocking purple and golden feathers. Motion rippled beneath the cloak like a metamorphic lava on the verge of hatching into the most beautiful creature imaginable. Fulgrim waited until his phoenix guard halted before throwing open his cloak to reveal his sculpturally perfect body. His elegantly curved pectorals, rolling deltoids, and ridged abdominals were bare of armor and gleamed with fragrant oils. His limbs writhed with fresh tattoos of coiling serpents, tattoos that even now began to fade as his superhuman biology undid the damage to his epidermis. Perturabo stepped towards the living platform as Fulgrim descended on a ramp of shields held out by his warriors. Forex saw a warrior in perfect balance who understood his body and its articulation to the highest degree. His every step was carefully placed, giving the lie to his flamboyant appearance.
"Brother Fulgrim," said Perturabo, his voice as calm as the instant before the first impact of a breaching shell. "Allow me to present a gift to you."
With pounding strides, Berossus approached the smirking Phoenician, who seemed amused by the stiff formality Perturabo insisted upon. The dreadnought dragged the two Imperial Fists captives forwards, their bodies twisted in the chains and fettered in razor wire. At a nod from Fulgrim, a pair of purple-clad warriors with golden halberds stepped forwards and swept their blades through the chains. They dragged Perturabo's gifts away as Fulgrim turned to receive a lacquered ebony case, such as might be used to contain charnable sabres in a bygone age. He held it out to Perturabo with a flourish.
"And a gift to you too, brother dearest," said Fulgrim.
Forex felt a twinge of unease as Perturabo took the case and opened its hinged lid. Inside lay a folded cloak of softest ermine, trimmed with foxbat fur and embroidered with an endlessly repeating pattern of spirals in the golden proportion. A flattened skull of chromed steel acted as the fastener. Set in the skull's forehead was a gemstone the size of a fist, black and veined with hair-fine threads of gold. Both were exquisite and worthy gifts for a Primarch. Perturabo swept the cloak around himself and snapped the skull fastener around his neck. Fulgrim smiled to see his gift was appreciated and lifted his gaze to the red rocks and barren landscape around him.
"This is a grubby little rock you have chosen for our meeting," he said.
"I had my reasons," said Perturabo. "Welcome to Hydra Caudatus." "What is the meaning of this?" demanded Perturabo, once they had returned to the heart of the Cavia Ferrum.
"Meaning?" said Fulgrim, examining the portraits on the crumbling stone walls with the detached fascination of a connoisseur of the fine arts. "Whoever said there had to be meaning in anything?"
"You know of what I speak," said Perturabo, "that host beyond my walls."
"Don't you approve of the company I keep?" said Fulgrim, his tone playful.
"That host of degenerates is beneath you," said Perturabo, gesturing to the violations of flesh, armor, and decency wrought upon his brother's companions. "And your legionaries, what has become of them?"
"Exquisite, are they not?" said Fulgrim.
Accompanied by 3 warriors as outlandish and varied as any Forex might imagine, Fulgrim had swept into the heart of the Iron Warrior's fortifications as though every gun and every warrior was his to command. Every towering siegework and soaring wall had been raised by his own hand. All but one were armoured, and clearly legion warriors, albeit transformed beyond all recognition. One, a lean, hawk-eyed swordsman with an arrogant swagger and a complex pattern of interlaced scars marring his perfect visage. Another, a bulky warrior whose virtually fleshless face was burn-scarred beyond all recognition and who wore armour swathed in a patchwork of stretched skin on spikes. Another's skull had been surgically disfigured so that his mouth stretched impossibly wide, with taut sinews and implanted bone augmentations swelling in and out at his neck at the slightest sound. This was who Forex had thought was Marius Verosian, but surely this monster could not be his old comrade in arms. A fourth figure came too, this one without armour and clearly not of post-human stock. His frame was slender, and he was possessed of a strange otherness in his movements that unsettled Forex greatly. The others of the Trident had seen it too, even Kroger, but whatever lay beneath this individual's shadowed hood was clearly a secret the Phoenician chose not to reveal just yet. Perturabo shook his head.
I know things have changed since we gave our oath to Horus that secrets have been revealed to you, but this is unseemly.
Fulgrim grinned, exposing brilliant white teeth that shone like polished ivory.
Secrets revealed? Giggled the Phoenician, pacing a slow circuit of the vaulted chamber.
His cloak brushed the flagstones, and the seductive musk of the oils worked into his flesh, saturated the underground space with scents of unknown worlds, secret desires and promises of pleasures and pains undreamed. Forex kept his breath short, but it was impossible not to taste the acrid flavour of the oils.
Oh, my brother, you have no idea of the things I know now, said Fulgrim, with a bark of laughter that expressed pain as much as amusement. Much I will share with you in time, and much is there that will bring us closer than ever.
Closer? Said Perturabo. I wasn't aware we were close at all.
Perhaps not, admitted Fulgrim, with a hurt pout. And that saddens me. Do we not share a gene, father? Did we not both spring from the loins of the same heroic god?
No, we didn't. We were created in a laboratory, said Perturabo, and he is no god.
Always so literal, sighed Fulgrim,
moving from the paintings to the architectural drawings laid out on the wide plotting table.
But the point remains, we are brothers, and we should be close, especially now when all we have known is falling apart, ready to be rebuilt in a glorious new image. It is my fondest hope that the shared hardships of this joint venture will bring us the intimate bond I share with Gilliman.
You aren't close to Gilliman either, pointed out Perturabo.
No, said Fulgrim, looking up as though puzzled by his own words. Ah, perhaps not yet, but I will finish what Lorgar's zealots have begun.
Not now, not ever, said Perturabo. Gilliman will never forgive us what we have done.
Because there is nothing to forgive, snapped Fulgrim. The Phoenician's mask of anger melted away in an instant, and he smiled.
Forgiveness is only required by those who pay heed to mortal laws, and we are so very far beyond that, brother. What I am proposing will lift us to a realm where we make the laws all things must obey.
And what are you proposing?
All will be revealed, teased Fulgrim. For now, let us say it will be a more profitable use of the Fourth Legion's time than crushing a few ragtag imperial fists on some backwater world for the sake of revenge.
Humbling Dawn's warriors is no waste of time, said Perturabo.
Well, quite, said Fulgrim, his delicate fingers flipping through the wax paper drawings with the occasional nod of appreciation. These designs are wonderful. Tell me, have you built any of them?
Only one,
said Perturabo, placing a hand in the centre of the plans. Yes, of course, the amphitheatre at Nicaea, said Fulgrim with sudden recollection that was entirely feigned. An arena for Magnus to be thrown to the wolves. Fulgrim laughed at his jest and said, such a shame it was destroyed. The potential of something wondrous is only realized when it is embraced and let fly. You draw them but never build them. Why is that? Perturabo met his brother's gaze and said,
because reality never matches our dreams.
Fulgrim nodded in understanding. So often that is the way. Too often when fantasies are made flesh, they disappoint and must be dreamed anew. But what would you say if I told you I could make it so that your every desire could be made real and would never disappoint, never fail to live up to your fondest expectation, and never, ever be eclipsed?
I'd say that you've gone more insane than you look.
Again, Forex saw the venomous hostility beneath Fulgrim's artful smile, like spineless cowards who know the only way to get what they want is to play nice. Just as quickly as it arose, Fulgrim's toxic anger was masked. Forex couldn't believe Perturabo hadn't seen it. It's true, said Fulgrim at last.
How?
All in good time, brother, said Fulgrim. Have patience, and we shall tell you everything you desire to know.
We? Asked Perturabo, cutting to the most important word.
Yes, said Fulgrim, drawing the slender, cloaked figure to his side. Carucci Vora is the teller of this tale, aren't you? Fulgrim's companion pulled back his hood, and Forex understood the source of his earlier unease, as finely boned features, full lips, cerulean hair, and amber-flecked eyes were revealed. Carucci Vora was Eldar.